What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Welcome back, Redheads, to another episode of the Redheads Book Club December edition. Last episode of the year. How is everyone doing?
Woo!
Fabulous. You know, I really was dreading coming here today. Not because, like, I didn't want to record, just because, like, I'm tired and stuff. But just being here, it just makes me feel so jazzed.
It is so jazz-worthy, especially because we have a local celebrity in our midst. Dana has just returned from her honeymoon this morning, and she got married this month, as I'm sure you all know, and we haven't caught up with you since. So how are you doing, girly girl?
Hello, everybody. It is wonderful to be back. The last time I saw you, we were raging at Edgewood Country Club in Rivermount, New Jersey.
On November 12th.
And it was great. The wedding went off without a hitch. I really couldn't be happier or more relieved or just, like, excited that it went well. Hawaii was incredible. It's crazy that I am now a new identity, Dana Webman. I've already sent my paperwork in to Social Security.
Wow.
You don't have my thank yous.
Next level. Changed her Instagram handle, I think, the night of her wedding.
Oh my God, no. I have, like, crazy OCD, and there was no service on the plane for 10 hours on the way to Hawaii, so I updated every single app, like DraftKings, Venmo, LinkedIn, Daily Horoscope. Like,
wow.
Every single app now has Dana Webman. He's like,
have service, how were you able to update?
They let you do the names.
Oh, interesting.
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm glad you spent your trip productively.
Yes, yeah. Thank you very much. And the best part of the trip was that Jackie, as a wedding gift, gave me a Kindle, which was sorely needed. Because I have been reading off of my phone for 10 years. Yep. So
you've
I've
been doing this podcast with a phone.
No, and yep. She reads more books than all of us combined off of her phone all year.
That is crazy.
And let me tell you, I didn't know what I was missing.
Thank you.
We literally talked to Josh's mom about this at the rehearsal dinner.
Oh my God.
We're like, so how do you feel about having a psychotic daughter-in-law? Because she reads her books on her phone.
Or it's like, you would be with your in-laws and everybody's reading because they're readers too, and you're on your phone reading, and it just looks rude.
Yeah,
like no one
yeah.
knows you're reading.
Yeah.
Like
when we were in Blackberry Farms in the spa, and the whole time I was glued to my phone. Like, it really is.
You look like you're addicted to your phone.
Yes,
but you're
and like
reading.
You're scrolling through Instagram / the pages of your book.
Yeah, no,
like, no one knows the difference.
I couldn't have been more wrong. The Kindle changed everything. Not only is it so much easier to read as an interface, but like in the sun by the pool, I would have to squint. The sunglasses were too dark. Off, it was too hard. Like, it was the perfect lighting. I'm obsessed with it. Thank you.
We are
wow.
so
That's
happy
a fabulous
for you.
Gift, Jackie.
She needed it, and it was, I knew that, like, I just, if she didn't get it by her wedding, like, I was so excited to be able to get it for you.
Yes.
And just fill that hole.
It was perfectly timed. And the Redheads got a lot of play at the wedding. Like, my mother-in-law works in book publishing, so she was so excited to meet the Redheads. Josh's friend's speech was literally predicated on the Redheads.
No,
like, the entire theme was the Redheads.
It was really crazy. We got so many shout-outs throughout the weekend. It felt really special.
We all got married.
Yes. Yeah. So special.
Exactly.
We married literature.
We did. We're married to books.
Oh my God.
Well, we're so happy that you're back. We're glad that you had a good time.
Thank you.
And, you know, you're our girly this month because this month we read The Midnight Library by Matt Haig, which was a Dana's choice. And I guess I'll give a quick summary of the book, and then we'll talk about our thoughts.
Oh my God, we're really jumping
into
it.
We're gonna jump right in. I guess I didn't catch up with you two.
No, I got nothing. My life surrounds my. It's like surrounded by Dana Holzberg. I mean Webman.
Yeah, no.
Like, she's the only thing that matters in my life.
Same. And it's like after she's like gotten married and on a honeymoon. Like, what else could the three of us say about what we've been up to?
I have nothing to share. It's gonna be so real.
Yeah. No. My month has been just. Dana Webman.
Thank you guys so much. You made this the best possible wedding it could have ever been.
Thanks, Dana.
Oh,
that's really
that's
cute.
That's really so sweet.
That's really kind.
Okay, we read The Midnight Library this month. It was, what would you categorize this book sci-fi,
like magical, no. Realism?
Magical realism, yeah. A little bit. So it's the story of Nora, who's very depressed in her life, and in one day she pretty much, you know, loses her job. She loses a couple of jobs and friendships, and it's just clear that she feels like she has nothing left to live for, and so she makes the decision to kill herself. And she wakes up in this library that where there isn't a librarian, Mrs. Elm, who is showing her through the library. And the library is all of the books of all of the different lives she could have led if she made different choices. And it's very complicated, yet not. I think the author did a good job of explaining the setup. So I never felt like, oh, this is unbelievable. What does this mean? Mm-hmm. But basically, she opens a book. She jumps into a different life. She tries it on for size. Does she like it? Is this the life that's going to make her happy? No. She comes back. She tries a different book. By the end of the book, she's realized the things in life that she's looking for, that she wants to live, that she wants to find some of these things that made her happy in other lives, but she has to do that within the context of the life that she just tried to leave. So she survives her suicide attempt and then goes on to make some of the changes that she learned during her journey through the Midnight Library. So our overall thoughts on the book, did we like it? I'm going to start with you, Dana, as this was a Dana's choice.
I really, truly loved this book. I felt thematically that it was written specifically for me. Like, between the library, I love books. Mm-hmm. I'm obsessed with the concept of the butterfly effect, which is essentially, like, one small thing could have a huge change down the line. And that's what this book was. You change one small initial circumstance, and your whole life changes. I just think it's such a good concept because it's so true, and people don't realize the power that they have. Any action that they make could really, like, change the world for good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
I really felt it was similar to Addie LaRue at points.
I had read that as well. Some of the redheads wrote in and said that they felt that way.
Mm-hmm. Especially when Hugo entered the scene. It was like the boy and Addie LaRue that saw her, and they were both in like the universes together. Yeah. So I liked those parallels. My only complaint is, and I don't even know if this necessarily would have made the book better, but the laundry list at the end of all the lives that she led, it kind of like numbed you to the specialness of the book, and I almost would have preferred just like 3 or 4 huge lives that we lead with her that take a long time and then go back instead of like bam, 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 bam.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Bex, what did you think?
I really enjoyed this book. I thought it was a fascinating concept, and it was just like a way for me to reflect on the decisions that I make in my own life, which I always appreciate about a book that kind of like expands your mind and thinking. And I loved the philosophical element that was interwoven within kind of all of the material. I liked that it was like plucking Hume and Aristotle and just like really magnificent philosophers that I feel like we just overlook at times. And it obviously like had such a profound impact on Nora. And I don't know, I've always been kind of into philosophy and just like that kind of thinking. So I really enjoyed that. I just thought that it was like, I also liked the length. I don't know. It's been such a long time since we had like a punchy book that like didn't expand way too much on every single thought. Like, we got through it, and it was exactly the right amount of time that we needed to spend with Nora and her lives. So I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed this. Thanks, Dee Dee.
I agree. Snatchler, what about you?
I really enjoyed this book.
Yes!
Nice! We have a happy snitch.
I think I realized how much I enjoyed it once I finished it because I, like, kept thinking about it. Like, I kept referencing it. I just feel like the book was just full of, like, so many little, like, anecdotes that really just, like, make you think, like, about, like, your own life and just, like, decisions that you make. And it also is just so crazy to me, like, how many different lives we could have possibly had.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do I really think that, like, we're having parallel lives at the moment? Like, no.
Oh,
but,
yeah,
like,
for sure.
You do.
Yeah.
Think that.
We'll get into that. Don't worry.
Physics, baby.
Okay. And I just, it like really just blew my mind. It just like made me think about like everything ever.
Yeah. I agree with all of you. I loved the book. I thought it was so concise. From the minute that we realized what it was going to be about, I was just like, this is a perfect book. And I would love to read more books about like different people and all the different lives that they would have led. Yeah. Like, I feel like I want to read this book about so many different other people. I thought it was so well written. It was like the author really packed the most into every sentence while not being too dense. Margot and I actually had a little reading play date the other night while our dogs went on a romantic date.
Yeah.
And I was telling her how I just like saw this one line that I'm going to read where I thought the author it just sums up like how well said he was. She said, She had shrunk for him. It was about Dan. She had shrunk for him, but he still hadn't found the space he needed, which just like summed up like so many relationships where it's like you make yourself small and you don't want the other person to like feel bad about themselves. And it's like, and you still, he didn't have the space that he needed. So I just thought there were so many sentences like that, that probably were throwaways for the author. He wasn't trying to make the biggest point of all time, but it was just like perfect writing.
Mm-hmm. He really grasps life well.
He really did. And there are so many highlights that I have from this book. And what's weird is usually in other books that I read, what, you know, the popular highlights always come up and I do feel inclined to highlight them. Maybe my Kindle wasn't working, but I wasn't seeing any Right? What is
and
that?
It's chock full of good highlights. It was refreshing, actually, to not have like everything highlighted for you, because when you felt powerful in yourself, you're like, oh,
no one
told me to feel this way.
Sometimes you feel like delegitimized in the way that you feel about a certain quote. If you're like, oh, 2,365 other people today felt this way.
Right, and it's like, am I only highlighting it because 2,365 people told me to, you know, and I'm feeling pressure. So it was nice to just like experience it and highlight the things that stuck out to me for whatever reason. And we will be doing the Kindle highlights section for this book, because I feel like there are so many just nuggets of goodness, and I want to hear what stood out to you guys.
I love that.
Great. I'm so glad we have a book that we're really 4 for 4 on, and we have great questions, DBQs. We got so many redhead questions. So I think we should just jump right in and explore. Now, before we do, I need to let you know that today's episode is brought to you by Acorn TV. Can you believe the holidays are right around the corner? That's just one reason this is my favorite time of year. The other reason is because there is so much amazing TV to watch, and my absolute favorite shows are all on Acorn TV. Acorn TV is the largest commercial-free British streaming service that features compelling stories, exclusive premieres, and originals you won't find anywhere else. With Acorn TV, there's always something new to discover. It has hundreds of exclusive shows from around the world, including award-winning mysteries, dramas, comedies, and so much more. You guys know my favorite show that I've ever watched is called A Place to Call Home, and it's on Acorn TV. And so, one, you should definitely go to Acorn TV, acorn.tv, and use code book to watch that show. But they also have so many other great shows, dramas, mysteries. They have a series called Manhunt: The Night Stalker. It is just premium content all the time. So try Acorn TV free for 30 days by going to acorn.tv and use my promo code book, but you have to enter the code in all lowercase letters. That's acorn.tv code book to get your first 30 days free. You will not regret it. Acorn is an amazing streaming service with so much content. If you're feeling like you're at a loss for what to watch next, you've watched everything and you're just coming up short, check out Acorn TV. You will literally have content for years. So now, DBQs, let's jump right in. What's your biggest regret?
Dad.
Well, where do I begin?
I'm kidding. So let's start with Nora at the beginning of the novel. Nothing is going right for her, and she feels her life is already full of so many regrets. Why did Nora feel this way? Why do you think she felt she had no other option but suicide?
I mean, that opening paragraph of the book was pretty rough for her. Like, she got fired, her best friend Izzy didn't text her back, her brother Joe didn't tell her she was in town, Robbie screamed at her that she ruined all of their lives, her old neighbor didn't need her anymore to deliver the prescriptions, her cat died, like, she missed Leo's piano lesson. Really, everything that could have gone wrong went wrong, to the point where I was like, it was the only part of the book where I'm like, this is a little stupid, like, it was overload and unbelievable.
Yeah.
But it just does go to show you that this too shall pass. Like, if she had just waited till the next day, Izzy responded, Joe explained that he wasn't avoiding her, he just didn't feel like talking about his breakup, etc., etc. So, like, lesson to everyone: when it rains, it pours. Just wait a little longer and it won't always feel that way.
Yeah, and I think at that moment she just felt so untethered to this earth. It's like, if I don't show up tomorrow, who will notice, who will care? And in that moment it felt like literally zero, down to her cat, who was the only person that was really relying on her. And so I understood how she felt, like, oh, okay, then I guess that's it for me. Like, I've failed on every path I've tried to go down. But then through the journey of the book, you're like, no, there's so much more to you than just one really, really, really bad day in a series of bad years, I would say. I don't want to like minimize what she was going through because it was obviously a lifetime of decisions, but there's always more, I think, was what she couldn't grasp.
Yeah, and it just goes to show when you're in the throes of that despair, it's so hard to see outside of it.
Yes, definitely.
And just flip your perspective a tiny bit. Like, I feel like she looked at everything as like, okay, this is all signs pointing to, like, I don't need to continue to work at this, versus like, she could have flipped her perspective and her perception and said, like, this is all going so awry and I need to make changes in my life, like profound decision uprooting changes that mm-hmm. will make my life better.
I also feel like everything in her external life was a complete failure. No offense, Nora. But what she failed to see at the time was, like, internally, she's probably the most talented, smartest person.
Yeah, she was so funny.
She had so much going on. So, okay, so this path in particular didn't work out. But you have so much more to give. Like, there are so many more things that you could do. I feel like she was just not... She was selling herself short in thinking that the world, you know, had rejected her when it's like, just why don't you choose one your next thing? Because you're literally good and smart at everything.
Yep.
No, you guys, when she went through her list of lives and what she accomplished, CEO, leader of a band that was like as big as Nirvana, like she had a glaciologist. I'm telling you, like, I was like, okay, like she accomplished that in all those lives. Like, I can barely accomplish like bullshit in my current life. Like, no, I don't think my parallel universes are like doing much better than I'm doing right now. Like, it was just crazy. I was like, she is excelling.
Yeah, but I feel like most people have like one, you know, big talent or skill, and it's like, okay, she started out, she was going to swim, she was the best swimmer, but didn't want to do that. She was going to do music, she was the most amazing musician, didn't want to do that. Anything that she like tried her hand at, she was amazing at. Yeah. So like, it was just try again.
Totally.
You know?
And that's why I think, and we'll get into this, the librarian was so pivotal of being the person that met her in the in-between, because like it was at that moment in her life when her dad died and the librarian was hugging her that everything changed, because from there on out she felt such immense guilt that like she was almost paralyzed in all of the decisions that she wanted to make.
Right, because she was worried how every decision would adversely affect the people around
her.
So as Mrs. Elm tells Nora how the Midnight Library works, she asks her, what would you have done differently if you had the chance to redo your regrets? Have you ever thought about if you made a different choice, what your life would be like now?
Yeah. Well, now I have. But I don't know what really would be different, because, like, obviously Nora had these, like, glaring other lives she could have had, you know? Whereas, like, I don't think that...
Well, that's, like, I think the whole point, that it doesn't need to be this glaring other life. Like, if you had made one small decision...
Right, of course.
Your whole life could have been different.
But it's hard to know.
Yeah. I try really to, like, not have regrets in life. I think that's, like, you know, a good premise that everyone strives for.
I think you do a good job of that.
Yeah. But I have, like, random regrets that probably wouldn't change the course of my life. But now reading this book, I'm like, I wonder what they are. So one regret that I have is I wish I didn't do this teen tour one summer in high school, because I was miserable and I wasted my summer, like, waiting to go on the teen tour. And then I only stayed for 2 weeks. And then, like, it was just a waste of a summer. And I always say, like, I just wish I went back to camp that summer. And, like, I wonder if my life would be any different.
What summer would that have been at camp?
It would have been super senior summer.
You missed your super senior summer?
Yeah, because, like, none of my friends were going back and everyone was going on, like, teen tours. I went on Suam.
That is the fact that you missed your... That was the best year of summer of my life.
Right. So I just, like, wonder.
Maybe.
You know?
Maybe and if she had gone back, it wouldn't have been.
Also, sometimes I think about if I didn't go to Colgate.
That's mine.
The fact that I went to Colgate is the most random decision ever.
Yeah.
And... Or if I didn't get into Colgate, which, you know, was also... a long shot, and I went to, say, NYU. Like, who would I be? Where would I be? It's really crazy. Those are, like, two things that came to
mind. You would be
a
completely different person. That's my number one, is, like, I remember I wanted to go to fucking Emory. I was going to apply early there.
Okay.
I imagine what I would be like had I gone through with that.
A basic bitch.
Yeah.
So that's a regret, technically, of yours, that, like, you didn't go to a college?
Yeah.
Okay. But then you would be somewhere so completely different.
No, I know, but maybe it'd be better. I don't know.
Right. Anyone else want to share?
No, the summer one strikes a chord, because there was one summer where I decided to stay back in lifeguard instead of going back to my summer camp in Maine and being a counselor. And, like, I think about it all the time. I'm like, that would have been the best summer ever. And, like, I stayed back because, like, I had, like, was dating someone and, like, all these terrible... I shouldn't have done that. Like, I should have just, like, lived my life. I don't think I would have been in a drastically different place, but I would have had way better memories from that summer.
Yeah.
I don't have huge examples like that. I think my regrets are more in the form of, like, how I think about things. Like, if I were to do it all over again, I wouldn't be so fixated on, like, how would this make this person feel? Or, like, would this person feel excluded if I did this? I just, like, wouldn't give a shit and do what I wanted to do. So more of, like, a pattern of thinking as opposed to a big decision.
Interesting.
I think it's a little different, but I understand what you're saying.
But perhaps the patterns of thinking have... Yes. Eventually influenced her decisions.
I see that.
I have. Like, I just, I don't know, not like I would care less about people and do what I want to do, but a little bit of that.
Yeah. No,
FOMO. And, like, I feel like FOMO, like, very much implicates
This, like, live for me. And like, that it's not... I engage in this thinking all the time, this butterfly effect, not because I have regrets and, like, what would have happened. I'm just, like, genuinely curious about the concept so intensely of, like, even just... Oh, if we had taken this flight and had a layover in this and we got here early, like, I'm just always engaging in that. Not even in an unhealthy way. I just, like, really find it such a fascinating thought exercise.
Yeah, I agree with you. If you somehow ended up in a place like the Midnight Library, how do you think you would handle it? Would you want to see all the different outcomes that your life could have taken? So this was one frustrating thing about Nora. I felt like from the minute she arrived, I got what was happening here. And she needed so much convincing to, like, go and explore all these other lives, especially for someone who was on the brink of greatness so many times. Like, I'd be bursting. I'd say, first up, I'd want to see myself as a rock star. So that was a little frustrating that she, like, needed to really be coached through it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I would be all in.
100%. That's like my little, like, adventure spirit in me. I felt like I was very aligned to Hugo in that way, where he's like, oh yeah, I'm like cruising through all these lives and like seeing all these wild things, and that sounds like the most delightful thing in the entire world. Like, I don't want to like see my loved ones die in every life I live. That I think could get very tiresome at some point and just exhaustingly sad. But I like want to be in the glaciers. I want to see a polar bear. I want to like visit Mars. I want to do all these things that like she had a chance to. And the crazy thing is like when she gets back to her life, she remembers all of it, you know? It's not like it got wiped from existence.
Yeah.
Like, she genuinely can touch on those experiences.
Yeah. I know this ends up being, like, the crux of the whole book, but it was so frustrating in every life how she was herself from her original life and couldn't adapt more organically. Like, when they described in her most perfect life with her daughter and her husband about how names would just come to her even though she had never met them, like, I wish that happened more in the other lives, whereas you more naturally integrated.
I agree, but I feel like it could have been worse. Like, at least when she was, you know, the swimmer, she had all that muscle memory. Like, there were things that, or when she was in the band, like, she didn't have to, she didn't totally choke on stage. Like, she had musical instincts already. So it was less frustrating than it could have been. It also could have been easier.
So much of the time, though, was, like, Googling who this person is, or, like, getting on stage and not knowing, or, like, do I have any media? It was, like, so much of that of just, like, figuring out, like, everyone's names.
Yeah. I wish that there was, like, a pamphlet or like a cheat sheet for each life that when she got there she could have just like downloaded the information necessary to like at the bare minimum survive.
Like, I agree I actually think her phone was that. Like, it was a very good use of technology. Like, her phone was always there. She Googles herself. She looks at like her text messages. Yeah. It was as helpful as like I agree. It could have been totally like boilerplate, but it was a good use of modern technology.
Agreed. Yes, but I just feel like she couldn't really get the full experience because she didn't know what the fuck was going on.
And that's inevitably eventually why she chose her original life. And like, I like that they incorporated that so that you could understand the decision. But it was a lot of imposter syndrome that was hard because it's like, that boy's so nice and you love him in this life and he likes dogs. But it's like, you hate him because you're not actually this person.
That
like,
was so funny.
That was really funny.
Nora goes to so many different realities, from marrying her ex-boyfriend to studying glaciers. Which alternate reality did you find the most interesting and enjoy reading the most?
The glaciers.
Wow.
Of course, obviously. I like see an ice sculpture. I'm like, this is it.
Wow.
I thought it was just so different. I thought it was like spectacular and so unique and far from ordinary. And I like just thought it was so interesting and fascinating. Like, if I could be like totally wild with my life and like still have like a legit career, that sounds cool to me.
That was the one for a while that I contemplated as like, this will be her life because it's the one thing she wanted for herself. So she's going to end up there. So I like that one too. I actually like the Australia one because it just goes to show how you can regret something so intensely in her original life, but look what would have happened. Her friend would have died. So it's like,
I know.
The grass is always greener. It's not always chalked up to be. You're now swimming in an outdoor pool. You don't know anyone and you're not happy.
Yeah, I agree. I think weirdly, the one I like best, but maybe it was just because it was the first one, so I was just enjoying the experience the most, was the Dan one.
Yeah,
because
I like
in
that.
In her original life, she has so much regret. Like, she left this man at the altar. Why? He's a perfectly good man, and otherwise she's completely lonely. And then it's so funny how, like, memory is just, like she says so many times, your imagination, and you look back on things with rose-colored glasses, and, like, she starts to remember all the reasons why she did leave him.
Yes.
And it really manifests itself in their miserable marriage. And I really felt like that was truly, like, what would have happened.
I loved when she withheld the answer to the 20-sided shape and then later threw it back at him in their fight. Like, and by the way, you're an idiot.
I feel like you would do that.
And I also, I feel like in other lives that she was leading, when she had that sense of disappointment and she went back to the library, it didn't feel like overwhelming disappointment. It's like, oh, so-and-so isn't alive? Bummer, I'm out.
Yeah.
When she went into the bathroom after her conversation with Dan, she was so overwhelmingly disappointed at the way her life would have ended up. It really felt like a... she understood the assignment as opposed to the other ones where it's like, I don't like this. Bye.
Yes. Agreed. I was almost like, wait, I thought this was the structure of the library. You don't get to go back unless you're actually disappointed.
Okay, that's what I thought. It was like she so easily just like left these lives. And I really thought it might have been a little bit harder for her to leave these lives.
They played with that a little.
Yeah, because it's like someone, like obviously someone dying is terrible, but it's like someone dies and then boom, I'm gone. But, you know, I just thought it was like.
Yeah, I agree. It started to get easier and easier for her to check out as opposed to having to be like fully like. Have the feeling that she had in her original life.
Yes.
Snitch, what was your favorite life of hers?
Oh, thank you for asking. Sorry. I really appreciate that. I actually enjoyed The Glaciologist.
Whoa.
Two for two, baby. Did you know that I saw that too? Snitch. Snitch, I beg you to just pay attention to me for one.
It's so hard. I just thought it was interesting. And also because she met Hugo.
Hugo was a very instructive character.
Yeah.
Yes, I liked him.
And also, like, the polar bear is just, like, so weird that I enjoyed it.
Okay, cool.
But also, like, that was definitely not the life that she was meant to live.
Do you like it because it reminded you of It Happened One Summer? Very similar.
Not really. They're on in the fucking, like, glaciers, like, middle of nowhere.
But they're, like, ice fishing and there's a cute guy.
Okay.
Okay. Every time Nora goes to one of these realities, there's usually a lot of good, but also something bad. Whether it's her brother dying in the rock star storyline or her mother passing away alone when Nora kept going with swimming, what do you think the author was trying to say there with how each of these concepts had huge consequences?
I think that life is complicated and you're going to endure highs and lows no matter how you construct it, or if you envision the picture perfect life, you like think you have it all, but like it's always going to have its fair share of hardships, and I think that like she experienced that in every life that she lived.
Yeah, I also like that the life when she was the rock star, I don't know, when like her dad was alive, I feel like that probably was like so fucking jarring for
swimming.
Her.
Swimming.
She was swimming. Like that must have just been like so crazy, but it's also like it was interesting how like kind of no matter what, like her parents were always gonna die.
Yeah, but it just made the circumstances a little different. Like, so her dad is, like, living his best life with his new girlfriend, and her mom died alone.
Yeah,
as opposed
earlier.
To, yeah. So with every, you know, up, there's a down.
Yes.
And I think that was true for every single life. There is no perfect life, is the message.
Something's got to give.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's now talk about Nora's relationship with the real-life Mrs. Elm. Why was this such a significant relationship for her? I mean, Dana, you spoke about this a little bit. It was just like a turning point in her life.
Yeah, it's twofold, I think. It was the point in her life that she thereafter lived with so much regret and fear of hurting people because she saw what happened by her decision not to swim and internalized that guilt when her dad died early because he was so stressed out about it. And also, she mentioned how it was the first time she really experienced kindness because Mrs. Elm, like, hugged her and made her feel better when her dad passed away. So it was just like a really pivotal character in her childhood that she later described in the library as a mechanism. Like it wasn't a real person. It was her subconscious.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And her way to filter through her life because this was someone that was trustworthy and it was one of the first people she felt that about.
Yes. Now, not to get too personal, but do you guys feel like there's anyone in your life who, if you went to your library, like that, you know who would be there?
I was thinking about that. Like, I think a camp counselor, honestly. Like, one of the camp counselors that I idolized when I was younger.
Interesting. I couldn't think of anyone.
I can't think of anyone.
Yeah, that's a great question.
I don't think everyone has, you know, someone. But also, it depends on, like, where you come from. Like, if you come from a family that where you're always supported, it's not as important to get that support from teachers and stuff. But if you come from an environment where you're being put down and just, like, made to not feel worthy when you are seen, it means so much.
Yes.
Like who?
I said like I am.
Right. We're constantly putting you down.
You're constantly making me feel unworthy.
Okay. I'll throw to you more on the questions. Will that make you feel worthier?
Yes.
Okay. Throughout the novel, Nora realizes how people blamed her for their own shortcomings and that the different realities she chose were based on hoping for a better outcome for her loved ones. Let's talk the significance of Nora realizing this. How did it help her move forward with her own life?
One of my favorite parts of this whole book was when she had the realization that regrets were actually just guilt for how she made others feel.
Yeah.
Her regret wasn't that she herself didn't get to go to Australia. It's that she felt bad leaving Izzy there alone. Her regret wasn't that she wanted to be an Olympian. It was that she had let her dad down. Mm-hmm. So once she was able to make that differentiation between the two feelings, I feel like her book of regrets basically disappeared and she was able to finally live for herself.
What happened after she had that realization?
She then chose a life where she said yes to Coffee with Ash. She said,
I love that life.
I want to choose something where I did something for me and not I didn't do something because of someone else whatever.
And she said no because she was with Dan.
Right. Mm-hmm. And that's where the growth really starts for Nora.
For sure.
What did you think about the storyline where Nora marries Ash and has a daughter? Why wasn't she able to stay in this alternate reality?
I adored this life. I just thought it was the life for her. And it made me so mad when she kept like, when she was like, I'm leaving soon. And I was like, why? Like, you finally figured it out. But I think it was like, she's leaving soon so she can go make that life for herself.
Do you think that that's what she's going to go and do? She's going to call up Ash.
Yeah, she said that she was going to ask him for coffee at the end of the 5K.
Right. I do think she is.
I do think she is too. So do they get married and have Molly?
I hope so.
I think she left that life not necessarily... Well, yes, because of that realization, but also because the premise is you leave when you experience disappointment. And then she started realizing, like, oh, Mr. Bannershade, the neighbor, is in the assisted living home. That's what happened because I didn't deliver his prescriptions to him. Like, Leo is getting arrested. That's what happened because I didn't give him piano lessons. The shop is closing. That's what happened because I didn't work there. And, like, inevitably, all that disappointment compounded for her to be like, this is actually not my life. The things I did in my other life are beneficial to others who are now hurting.
What about what's beneficial to her?
Right. I found that a tough pill to swallow. Me because too. It's like she can't be responsible for everything everyone around her is doing and at the sake of herself. Like, she should live this miserable small life so that
for other people
so Mr. Banerjee gets his prescriptions. Like,
and that's what where it kind of like fell apart for me at times in the book. Like, it was like the first time I was reading it where I was like, wait, what? Because she was wholly unhappy, miserable in her life, and was in this parallel life that she really felt fulfilled by, and then like having glimpses of her old life that made her so miserable, and then her getting so triggered by it. I was like, wait, like this whole exercise feels like it's unraveling. Like, have we learned nothing?
I agree. Like, there's always pros and cons.
Yeah.
And, okay, here are some cons, but like you're living your...
I think it started showing her that she was meaningful in her life. Like, she realized for the first time
I think it helped her realize there was meaning in her life, that like her life wasn't as shitty as she thought it was.
Yeah. What were some of the key realizations that made her want to go back to her original life? Wow, I feel like we're answering each question completely correctly because then the next question just totally confirms what we just said.
Oh my God, we're acing this exam.
We are acing this exam.
I think it was mostly her imposter syndrome, how in every life she entered, even when she loved it, she never really felt authentically herself and that it belonged to somebody else and she was like improvising. And
well, I mean, everyone kept being like, are you okay?
Yeah. Like... I think that was the main driver of, like, I love it here, but it's not real. It's not me.
Yeah, feeling like she joined life halfway through, I imagine that can get tough at times.
I understand, but also, like, you skipped the hard part, you know?
Yeah, for like, sure. Like, you missed childbirth.
Yeah, no, like, you, that, but then also, it's like, you didn't have to go through all the school of becoming the glacial. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you're there.
She didn't get to hook up with a rock star.
Oh, yeah, Ryan.
How will things be different for Nora going forward? What happens next for her?
I think she just will view life glass half full versus glass half empty.
Perspective, baby.
Like, her entire mindset has completely changed.
Yeah. It's really amazing.
It's like when people say that they, like, had, like, a near-death experience and they see life totally different.
Or it was reminding me of, you know, the people who jump off the Golden Gate Bridge. There's a few survivors, and they say, like, the moment that they jumped, they regretted their decision. And it makes you wonder if in that time, like, they're in the library.
Oh,
makes you think.
Holy shit.
Makes you think.
Okay.
Do you think a midnight library exists?
Yeah.
You actually think that, like, you can go into your other lives?
I don't think that's how it necessarily works, but I do think, like, once you reach the afterlife, like, you get access to all of these other things and knowledge about things that you wouldn't have known. Doesn't mean you can come back to your life and take all those learnings with you. Like, I don't think.
But then it's just upsetting if I like saw life where I was like fucking crushing it and I'm like, wow, like, but now I'm dead. So who does
that help? Maybe you wouldn't see it. I do think you would have access to information. But,
definitely.
But it's not really, I don't think that's what really happens.
I don't think it's called the Midnight Library.
Well, but, like, obviously, because that, like, one had a DVD store.
Right, well, that's my next question, Counts. In Nora's life, her in-between place is a library. Hugo's is a video store. Other people have restaurants. What would yours be? Dana, we know yours is a library.
A library.
Yeah. A farmer's market.
Yes. Wow. Jumping into Peppers left and right.
I was thinking for me, maybe a department store.
Yes. 100%. Yes. Thank you for the answer. Yes. It's correct.
I think mine would be like a music store. Oh, like vinyls.
Cute. Yeah. Oh, that's yeah. cute. It wouldn't be like a super gym.
It would be a super no, gym where the live method. Where the live weights are tequila bottles.
Yeah. Maybe it'd be like the Casamigos, like a Casamigos ranch or something.
No, it's all of the different weights, like the free weights you pick up and then you enter a new life.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
It's the live method.
It's the live method. Live. Live method.
The midnight live method.
Truly.
Okay. Those are our DBQs. I really feel like we are getting to the heart, the meat of this book. And now we're going to get into the redhead questions. But before we do, I want to let you know that this segment is brought to you by Talkspace. We have shifted how we work and learn, but sometimes it feels like the world is changing faster than we can keep up with it. Talkspace online therapy can help you manage stress, process significant life changes, and more, so you can feel less overwhelmed and more in control. The people around us make a huge impact on our lives, and life's pressures can cause those relationships to change, for better or for worse. So in the last 2 years, so many of us have undergone so much change, and talking about it and having a resource and a place to go to talk about these things is so important for your mental well-being. As the year ends, another holiday season is upon us. For many of us, that means travel and family, and for a lot of people, that can be additional stress. And again, Talkspace is a wonderful resource and outlet where you can talk to experienced professionals who can help you get through whatever might be troubling you. I also feel like this book, The Midnight Library, really emphasizes the importance of taking care of your mental health. And I'm so glad that we are able to share Talkspace with you guys. Talkspace is ready to help you start feeling better with a single message. If you need a little support to help you through the end of the year or want to start building towards a better upcoming year, Talkspace is here to help. Match with a licensed therapist when you go to Talkspace.com and get $100 off your first month with the promo code BOOK. That's $100 off when you use code BOOK at Talkspace.com. Thank you, Talkspace. Redhead questions. Please share your thoughts on Mrs. Elms. I personally thought she was the sweetest. Yeah, she was a very good vessel. She moved the book along. She was, you know, nice and concise with Nora. I she didn't bother me at all.
Once you started viewing her through the lens of this is actually just Nora and like Nora's subconscious, right. It was interesting to be like, well, how do you know that? I don't know. I think there was the interplay between those two were good.
Yeah, I liked her.
Yes, at first I thought she was sort of a neutral force just guiding Nora through this midnight library. And then through each kind of subsequent life and return to the Midnight Library, I felt like she was giving more and more advice. Like mm-hmm. she at one point said, like, you might need to stop worrying about other people's approval and all the efforts to get Nora, like, something about approval. And yeah. I feel like that, like, reshaped and reframed Nora's entire approach to the library. So I was like, oh, like, you're not just a neutral force. Like, you're, like, her life coach.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Literally.
Also, in the beginning, like, Mrs. Elm was kind of giving us nothing. She was very
yeah,
mysterious.
Yeah, she was, like, kind of mean.
And then towards the end, she, like, revved up, book, shelf number 11, book number 3. Go like, she just got so, like, hasty
yes.
in her lessons because they were running out of time.
Yes.
So it was interesting how her approach changed
yes.
throughout the book. How did you find the reading process? Were you more focused on the lessons being told throughout or more focused on the different plots and how Nora's life would end up?
A little bit of both. Like, you know, it was like playing like ping pong in my head of like what I should be focusing on.
I agree.
That's a good question.
That is a good question. We got so many great questions about this book because I think also it's a great book.
I'm happy she asked that because it has highlighted to me that's actually what I was doing without realizing what I was doing. Like soaking in the life lessons and then trying to fixate on the plot.
Yeah, but a part of me was trying to figure out like what's going to be the best life for her. What should she have done? And I would say like a third of the way into the book, I realized that like Ash, there was more to Ash than we were seeing. Like, when he first showed up at the doorstep, I didn't think anything. But then the fact that he had asked her out for coffee, I was like, she should go explore a life with Ash. And so I felt that
they left
one coming.
The breadcrumbs very strategically.
And then she smiled at him when she was with Dylan.
Yeah. But I did think that she would end, stay in that life, and that's how it would end, sort of. But there was still too much percentage left of the book, so I was like, something's got
to
go wrong.
I very early on was like, she's going to go back to the original life. And then as I was reading, I was like, that can't be it. And then when it happened, I felt validated.
I focused more on the life lessons. As we speak about this question, I was not invested at all about the lives. I didn't care where she ended up. I didn't care about where she was going or where she was going to be or anything. I was just like, what's going on here, life lesson-wise?
Yeah. This reader felt that despite getting a glimpse into Nora's many personal lives, she still felt distant from her as a character, and overall felt that the reader never gets a glimpse at who she really is. Did you also feel that way, or did you feel you had a deeper connection with her? You know, I kind of agree with this, yeah. And mm-hmm. actually mostly realized it when we had to cast
same.
Her.
Oh my God, I could not picture this same. Bitch at
no,
all.
No, because they never gave us really descriptors about her. Yeah. And obviously a person is so much more than their physical appearance, but it's also like the way that you dress, the way that you carry yourself, how you see yourself.
100%.
And I do feel like we know what Nora's interests were, what her strengths are, that she's smart. But as to her, like, personality, is she funny? Like, I didn't know her that well.
I totally 100%. Agree. I agree.
Do they ever even describe what she looks like?
No, they just describe the changes in her appearance in the different lives, whether it's muscles, whether it's right. hair, whether it's wrinkles.
It's weird.
Maybe that's intentional.
I think it is. She really is a blank canvas.
The book was so deep in its themes and like ideas, but you're right. The character itself wasn't so developed. Not in a way that I thought detracted from the book, but it was an interesting
She
contrast.
Really just felt like a vessel.
Yes.
And, you know, she was reminding me a little bit of that book, Eleanor Oliphant. Yeah. It's completely yeah. fine.
You hated that book.
I hated that book, but the beginning of the book is yes. very similar to yes. this book. Next up, some readers thought that this book reminded them of Addie LaRue, while others said, was it just me or did this book remind you of Have You Seen Luis Velez? I felt like the author was spelling out the themes and always taking the, take always the entire time.
That takeaways?
Yeah, maybe takeaways. She felt very like spoken to about the themes and the lessons. And I do feel that. I see where you're coming from. I didn't think that because I just thought the way it was written was just so much more elevated. It was masked better.
At the end, I saw it because there were many quotes that I highlighted that I felt like really encapsulated the message. But then there were so many of them yeah. that yeah. I was like, oh, okay, we are at a redundant place.
I felt that with the bear. I feel like 100 times after the bear, it was like, I wasn't scared because of the bear. I was scared because I realized I wanted to live. Yeah. Like, yeah. that was a little much.
yeah. yeah, it was heavy-handed for sure. Yeah. And there were a lot of different life lessons coming at us.
But I appreciated it because sometimes I needed to be reminded of like, what it was, because the book was complicated in ways where I was like, oh yeah, good, remind me of like what the theme is here.
Yeah, I agree. Does the idea of parallel universes intrigue you, or like this reader, are you overwhelmed by the possibility? I enjoyed the book very much and didn't feel as anxious as I thought I would at the prospect of all the possible outcomes of life, but I still found that this idea is one that leaves me a bit unsettled. What are your thoughts on this? So Snitch, you say you don't believe in it.
No I like believe
felt that way, Snitch.
I believe in it. Like, I guess in theory, no. Yeah, I guess I don't believe that there's like a parallel life of Margot going on at this point.
Right. Like, you leave this studio and you either take an Uber or you walk, and either way, those universes are both happening at the same time. You know,
there's someone in an Uber. Then
there's someone in an Uber. You're in the Uber, but also in another world, you're walking home.
I just, it's too much for my mind to grasp.
I agree. I'm sure that there's like physics and very real science behind it, yeah. but it's just far too much. And the idea that like I'm so in myself, like that, so my soul is split a million times into a million universes, you know?
100%. It's like 1,000% happening. Like our Earth exists like billions of times over. Like to think that we are the only ones.
No, I don't think we're the only ones on Earth, but am I the only me?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think there are millions and yes,
billions
I,
of
yes,
me.
Yes, I, oh 100, I really do. I really okay. think that. But I do,
but like,
also
wait,
think.
It, talk to me about this. Like
the metaverse.
Will you run into
Facebook
her?
Is onto
like, could
something.
You run into you?
No,
it's happening
no.
in an
no.
alternate universe.
That no, you're like exactly light like years this. Away.
Like parallel. Like you can't crawl. Well, the book described it
but
as perpendicular.
But does what we do on this universe influence what's happening on those? That's what's happening in the book.
I don't think that's what's happening.
Do you know what I always
yeah,
think?
Yeah, no, like she makes a decision, and then in her universe that she's living in, that's the way her life goes. But in another universe, it goes the way...
No, I think that, like, her life has, like, all of these decisions made, and it's just, like, variations of all the life with all the decisions. But, like, in her rock star life, her not picking up the phone for Ryan doesn't impact her... swimmer life.
So then do we not have free will if everything's just going to happen on every universe regardless? Well, that
brings, this is one of the passages I highlighted. That brings into question the cat point. How the cat was going to die no matter what.
Right.
Because that was just his predetermined fate. But the humans have free will, apparently, because one decision can change the entire outcome.
But I thought
outcome.
Cats have 9 lives.
So it called into question that, like, why did the cat, and then Hugo mentioned the same thing happened to their dog, died at a pre-specified moment, whereas humans, from what the book made it sound like, have power and agency.
Oh, I didn't feel confused by that. The cat was sick. You're going to die. That happens to humans, too.
But the mom was sick, but she ended up dying earlier because...
I think the way her life was going... She was leading a sadder life. It was like degenerating faster. Yeah. Whereas the cat actually was leading a very happy life and lived longer. But there was no world in which the cat outlives this disease.
Yeah.
It didn't bring up a question of free will for me.
Then I think the book is promoting only free will and not fate.
Because I think what you're saying, Rebecca, is like there's a million universes and every possible permutation of life is happening simultaneously.
Yeah.
But... I think this book is saying there's a million, like there's our universe and then there's the a million offshoots of it based on the decisions we make in this universe.
I just think that the idea of a parallel universe is that they're happening in parallel.
But she also said perpendicular at times.
Oh, she did?
They use the word perpendicular. So they are like
connected. She did talk about that tree analogy.
Uh-huh.
What I always wonder.
It's not just a bunch of beanstalks going
up. Right.
What I always wonder if fate is at play, and then in these books, when the person goes into the parallel universe and changes things, like, isn't their mere presence entering this environment changing the future than it would have been if they didn't enter it? Like,
there's even more like permutations than they're even saying. Right? Is how you feel? Yeah, I feel
that
too.
Always confused me. That one concept, like, she went into the universe and was like, oh my god, this is my daughter and I don't know who she is, and so she went into the room and started a series of games where she could learn her name and the street they lived on. But like, if she hadn't entered into the world, she would have never done that. She would have handled it differently, like go back to bed. So then did that create more offshoots? Like, just probably. The sheer fact of being there as an imposter changed the world.
Yes.
Yeah,
I was thinking that too.
But that's why the library was infinite no matter how you sliced it, because of things like that.
I will say that it was comforting at times hearing, or just like thinking through the vastness and like the billions, trillions, infinite aspects. Like, it made me feel so small and insignificant, which at times, like when I'm so overwhelmed and in my thoughts and just inundated by like my life plans, et cetera, I'm like, I'm such a speck. Like, this is so
humbling.
It's kind of comforting.
Yes, it's very comforting.
To know that you are nothing.
Yes. You're nothing. Your problems are zero.
Zero. Like, look at this universe in front of us.
Yeah, I like knowing that.
Yeah,
me too. It doesn't make me feel insignificant. Like, it gives me
I want to feel insignificant.
It's comforting.
It makes me scared that, like, this life is pretty good for us, and what life am I not doing well in, and, like, I don't ever want to leave this.
Well, that's the feeling I think you're trying to achieve. It's like, I hope I didn't do anything differently because I wouldn't then be here, which is where I want to be. Nora didn't have that yet.
I guess it makes me sympathetic to my parallel self for whatever they're going through.
I know, truly, because like, my perpendicular the life self. That Nora loved so much, which was like pretty similar to, I think, like the lives that many of us lead or will lead or have led. Wow, you guys. And I'm like, wow, like we have a lot to be grateful for. Like, we should feel very lucky because like this is like the life that she was happiest in. Not saying it's that easy, but.
And we should remember whenever we're like, oh, we wish we had done that. Like, you never know how it would have turned out if you actually did it.
Yeah.
Could have been worse.
So do you think Nora was
could have been better.
Do you think Nora was always intended to return to her real root life? In other words, was the Midnight Library just a lesson for Nora to learn to appreciate her current life? Or did the Midnight Library actually have another life for her available and she just had to find it? And I guess that she didn't find it. This is a great question.
So glad she brought this up.
And I hadn't thought about it. But you know what? Now I do think that she was always intended to return to her root life because she did find the perfect life for her. And that was with Ash and Molly. And they didn't let her stick there. And all she wanted was to stay there.
Yeah.
And so I do feel like this was just about the lessons.
Yes. My an offshoot of this question is everybody who enters the Midnight Library, is the expectation that they will end up in their root life? Or do you think there are people who go to the Midnight Library or their version of it and end up in a life that they get sucked into?
Right. I don't think...
Like, is that even a possibility?
Like Hugo.
I don't think so. I don't think it's a possibility because, like, Hugo, he's not going to end up in one of those lives. Hopefully, he needs to experience a million more lives to appreciate what he has in his OG life. Or he just, like, does this until... OG Hugo dies. I don't know, but I really, now that I think about it, I don't think anyone ever just like jumps into the book and stays there.
Well, what's this is where it gets a little sci-fi-y, but like they said, if you die in your original life, you can never go back to the library. It sounded like you're stuck in whatever life you were currently in. So like, what if she was in a really shitty one, but then she had died in the original life and she couldn't return and like that's her new life?
They were also saying that if you die in the life that you're living, you can't go back.
Those seem like fair rules.
Yeah.
Especially because all the people who go to the Midnight Library are between life and death somehow. And, you know, at a certain point, like, they pull the plug.
Yeah.
Okay. Now it is time for the Kindle highlights. What passages or passage did you highlight? And why did it stand out to you? There are so many. I thought the writing was so great.
There was so many. And I just, like, forgot to highlight most of the ones that caught my eye. And there was only one that I highlighted.
Okay.
Why want another universe if this one has dogs?
Oh, I love that. That's so sweet.
Right?
Yeah.
And then there was also the one, and hopefully one of you highlighted it, that they kept repeating about small decisions or small things and how they lead to other things. I don't know.
Yeah. For me, I have two things that I wanted to share, and they're just about the fact that, like, how she was still herself in every life that she went to, like, still, like, depressed Nora. And so they said, are there any other lives at all, or is it just the furnishings that change? Because, like, we are the same no matter what we're doing, where we go. We have the same, like, feelings of disappointment. It's just the surroundings look different. And then also, she talks a lot about, like, loneliness and solitude. This is a bit of a longer one, but it says, she had thought in her nocturnal and suicidal hours that solitude was the problem, but that was because it hadn't been true solitude. The lonely mind in the busy city yearns for connection because it thinks human-to-human connection is the point of everything. But amid pure nature, or the tonic of wildness, as Thoreau called it, solitude took on a different character. It became in itself a kind of connection, a connection between herself and the world, and between her and herself.
And that was in her glacier time, right?
Yeah. And it just, it makes you crave the farm chemin life.
100%.
It, you know, solitude in the big city, you're yearning for connection.
I really liked that quote too, Jax.
Thank you. Bex, what you got for us?
I have a bit of a longer quote too. And this was when she was getting interviewed in her rock star life. And she said, there are patterns to life, rhythms. It is so easy while trapped in just the one life to imagine that times of sadness or tragedy or failure or fear are a result of that particular existence, that it is simply a byproduct of living a certain way rather than simply living. I mean, it would have made things a lot easier if we understood there was no way of living that can immunize you against sadness. And that sadness is intrinsically part of the fabric of happiness. You can't have one without the other. Of course, they come in different degrees and quantities, but there is no life where you can be in a state of sheer happiness forever. And imagining there is just breeds more unhappiness in the life you're in.
I agree with that last line.
I agree with it too. And I thought it was kind of sad, but realistic and like promising that she was evolving her mentality of like what her life was and what it could be.
Yeah. And realizing that like happiness is not just like being happy 24/7. That's not a real thing. It's like experiencing moments of joy.
Yes. Oh, wow. Yeah.
Thank you, Snatch. Dana, what do you got for us?
This was my quote. Nora stared down at her small mole on her left hand. That mole had been through everything she'd been through, and it just stayed there, not caring, just being a mole.
wait. When I read that, I highlighted it, and I sent it to Dana, and I said, are you triggered? You guys, I don't know if the readers know this, but Dana has, like, mole phobia.
I really feel like this book was written for me. Like, he found me and wrote it for me.
I agree. Like, the whole premise, the library. Yes. Like, Dana
Butterfly effect.
Oh, down to the fact that, like, it's her and her mole on this journey.
Okay, yeah. So, like, I have a very weird love-hate relationship with moles. I know where everybody's moles are. Like, it's just a gift or a curse I have. Like, I'll meet you for 1 second and I can tell you where your moles are. It's also a form of identification strategies for me because I cannot remember who people are. Like, I have a very good memory. If you tell me your name, I'll tell you everything about you, but like facial recognition, zero. Geographical location recognition, zero. Like there is something wrong in my brain where I cannot remember faces and places. And moles are what ground me because I'm like, oh, I know where your moles are, I know who you are. So I just feel like the fact that she used her mole as a grounding mechanism where every universe she was in, she was reminded of who her true self was by looking down at her left hand. I was like, oh my God, I'm in the Truman Show.
Oh my God.
Literally, you are. I felt the same way. And it was just like funny because in other lives she would have tattoos or scars that were all in flux based on decisions that she made. But mole was always with her.
Moles are forever.
Moles are forever.
I'm going to vomit even.
It didn't make you feel more fondly towards moles, like thinking about it in that way.
I just
do you have any moles, really?
Oh, Dan has the most moles. That's what's so ironic. It's like she looks at you and she's like, wow, I'm disgusted by the existence of your moles, and let alone her, this girl, and her moles
everywhere.
They're
my North Star. Like, I just feel like.
What'd she say?
They're my North Star.
I feel like I'm on to something with these moles.
Okay.
I have so many to show you.
You don't need to.
No, she knows where they are.
I know, Switch, I know.
Look at that crazy one.
I'm so happy that this resonated with you in such a profound way.
So much.
Okay, now it is time for the moral of the story.
I mean, where do we begin?
This feels like Luis Velez. It was moral after moral. Mine is no regrets.
Oh,
no regrets.
Not even one letter.
No, because that really was the moral for me. It's like just diminishing this book of regrets, realizing that these aren't things that you should regret, because if you had done it that way, like, it actually could have been worse, or it wouldn't have made you happy. Yeah. So trying to live without regrets aside from the teen tour. And actually, I don't regret going to Colgate. Like, I loved Colgate. I just sometimes, I sometimes wonder where I would be if I stayed in the city and went to NYU. But I don't wish that I did that at all. Still my one regret would be
Sulam,
the teen tour. Yeah.
Mine's life's what you make it. So let's make it rock.
Oh, that's always good.
Mine is never give up on the idea that there can be a life somewhere that can be enjoyed.
Oh, that's sweet and promising.
But what if you can't get to that life because you're a parallel? I'm just not
understand. About parallels, but like, say you're feeling completely in despair, like, you know, there's nothing left to tie you, no one cares about you, like, never give up on the idea that there is a life
in the future.
Build. Yes.
I understand. That's beautiful. Rit, that's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much.
Mine, I'm just borrowing from the book that was repeated almost every page, but never underestimate the big importance of small things.
That's what I was trying to say. Oh. And I said, I hope so.
Full circle.
No one's listening to anyone.
Full circle. I'm listening to all of you.
We're listening.
Full circle. Is what
In Matt Haig's words, that.
Yeah.
I also was thinking of You Snitched the Whole Book. A Taylor Swift lyric kept popping into my head.
Oh.
If one thing had been different, would everything be different?
Wow.
I feel like that lyric really encapsulates the heart of this book.
Definitely.
It does. Thank you for that, Serenade.
Now it's time for the Hollywood treatment. We are casting Nora and Mrs. Elm, but really this is Nora's show, so you just need a strong female actress who's really a chameleon in all different lives.
Okay, I really feel like I have the answer.
Okay.
I mean, the answer is Dana Sophie Holzberg.
Sophie Turner. Nora's 35.
It's fine.
Okay, Sophie Turner, you said. I said Jenna Coleman. She is from Victoria. She's a British actress, and I just, like, love her. So I want to see her in more stuff. And she's 35.
That's a good one.
You guys, I forgot that she had to be British.
Me too,
she could put on an accent.
So I had Kristen Stewart, obviously.
You're obsessed with her. This is, like, three in a row.
I know. But I knew you guys would get mad at me. So I also had Emma Roberts and Lucy Hale. Like, I just was so unsure who this character is.
Okay. I think that it needs to be someone a little more serious than those girls, because they're more like cheeky rom-com. Like, I almost did like Amelia Clark, but she's so smiley.
Oh, yeah.
And like, Nora is very serious.
That's why I did Kristen Stewart, because like, Nora was just like sultry and just deathy all the time.
Yeah, I agree. Dana?
Brie Larson.
Very good. Honestly, that might be the best one that we have.
Thank you so much. I was channeling her in Room.
Oh, great. For Mrs. Elm, just sweet old lady, Betty White.
Margot Nightingale, you know I always choose her.
I did British, Maggie Smith.
Beautiful.
Professor McGonagall.
Betty White.
Amazing. Anyone could get the part. Okay, you guys, that is like our recap. Now we're going to rate the book. I'm going to miss talking about this book.
I know.
It's been a while since we've all really rallied behind a book and had such a great productive discussion. So now it's time for our overall rating. I just want to let you guys know that now our overall Redheads rating is in the description of each podcast episode. So if you ever want to read a book, but you want to know what we rated it first, head over to the podcast description and check it out. Dana, what did you rate this book?
A 4.6.
Nice. Wow, that's big numbers for Dana. Rebecca?
4.2.
Nice. I rated it a 4.5.
Nice.
Four.
Nice. I'll take it, Snitch.
I think this might be our highest rated, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah?
4.325.
That feels right.
That yeah. feels right.
Can I just say something? So when I put all the descriptions into the episodes,
okay.
I had to go back and listen to every episode and skip to the part where we do the math and we add it up. And every single time I add it up, Margo goes, that feels right.
At least we're accurate.
Oh my God, we're nothing if not consistent. No,
but I just want to let you know our ratings are all over the place. And I'm not going to lie, like this feels low for this book.
Comparatively to what we've rated some trash ones.
No, like, there were some fours going around for Luis Velez. Like,
this not was, for me.
These probably were crazy. For me
because yeah. I was like, you guys, good lessons being had, being yeah. taught.
No, it took a while for me to realize like what happened to us with Luis Velez.
You guys, we were also predisposed to hate it because we had to reschedule 16 different times. Like we were in a dark yeah, place mentally, physically, emotionally. Like,
we had physically come up here and then a crane fell and we had to turn right around. It wasn't even like we canceled before we left our
apartment. But we had already read the book, so how could it have been placed?
No, we would just so like much. Resented the conversation.
Okay, fine. We won't.
I kind of liked Luis Velez. Yeah.
But like, no one can admit it. Like, we like, had like all just decided that we hate Luis Velez. Like, I think I liked
it
too.
It didn't age well, but I think at the time.
I agree. It didn't age well, but yeah. while I was reading it, I was completely yeah, fine with yeah. it. I thought it was really sweet. Okay, now it's time for the other books that we read this month. And this segment is brought to you by Bookfinity. Bookfinity is introducing the first ever Moody Awards. The Moodies are first of its kind, an end of year book awards for your favorite reads based on how they made you feel. The categories are books that made you feel the most happy, amused, empowered, scared, inspired, and informed. We are excited to announce that one of the books that we recap this year, Malibu Rising, is nominated in the amused category. Voting is open all month, so go vote for your favorite books of 2021 at bookfinity.com/vote. And while you're there, check out the rest of the site. Bookfinity is the newest experience built for readers. Get personalized book recommendations by taking the fun pop culture inspired quiz to discover your reader type. You can also track books you want to read, add quick reviews to what you've already read, and find local bookstores in your area to help support small businesses this holiday season. Visit bookfinity.com/vote to vote in the Moody Awards and get started. Also, Bookfinity is a great resource because I never know what to read next, and Bookfinity just gives great recommendations. And they shared all of our reader types, which now everyone knows what they are here, right?
Yep.
Yep.
And it makes knowing what you should read next even easier, knowing what you like. So definitely check that out. Now, who read what this month? Let's start with Margo.
Don't think I read anything this month.
Okay, totally fine. Rebecca?
Me too. Sorry, guys.
Totally fine. Dana, how many did you read this month? Whoever okay. read less can go first.
I read 8.
Oh, I guess I'm going first. Oh, my God.
I was just by a pool reading for 2 weeks straight. So
she pounded the Kindle.
Yes.
Okay, I read 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and a half. I started
that's
a book.
That's still unbelievable. That's you were insane. Not on a 2 week yeah. honeymoon.
No, but I'm like nesting. So, and also I made a commitment. I don't know why. I was just like, I want to read this month. I don't want to watch TV. So I've just been reading. First thing I read was The Last Thing He Told Me by Laura Dave. It was a Reese's Book Club choice and I was seeing it all over the place. It was pretty meh. I gave it a 3. It didn't bother me, but it didn't rock my world at all. Then I read Good Morning Monster, 5 Heroic Journeys to Emotional Recovery by Katherine Gildener. This was a recommendation from Lauren Bostick, The Skinny Confidential. It's a nonfiction book. It's written by a therapist. It's the stories of 5 of her clients' patients and their journeys to emotional recovery. It was amazing. It really like totally had me in my thinking and just change the way like I think about people and I think about situations and how everyone is just like a product of all of the things that have happened to them in their lives. And like it's just, it was so good. I love the way that it was broken out. It was like I would read one person's story every night and I finished it rather quickly. Rebecca, I think you would really like it.
Okay, I'm gonna read this book.
And I made Dana read it.
It's very good. I second that.
So okay. She will share her rating. I gave it a 4. It could have been a 5. I don't know why I was feeling so stingy. Then I read The Last Time I Saw You by Liv Constantine. I just wanted like a fancy thriller, like good looking people killing each other sort of thing. And Lauren Elizabeth has recommended this book to me. And that's exactly what it was. It was really good, you know, like a whodunit in a fabulous scenario. At times it was like frustrating and I wasn't obsessed, but I gave it a 4. My ratings are all out of whack because that shouldn't get the same rating as Good Morning Monster.
Whatever. Good Morning Monster is better, you think?
Yeah. I also read Rock, Paper, Scissors by Alice Feeney, which is another book that's like been making the rounds on people's reads, and it's a thriller. And you know, I really liked it. It was an extremely slow burn. So if you are someone who like needs to be hooked right in, don't read it. If you're someone with some time on your hands and patience and looking for a good payoff, I would recommend it as a good thriller. It definitely was surprising to me, and I liked it a lot. I gave it a 4, and I am glad that I read it. Then I read Golden Girl by Ellen Hildebrand. Everyone knows Ellen Hildebrand. Mm-hmm. She's like the summer like book queen. She's written like a million books about Nantucket. And this was her latest fiction book that no one really like insisted that I read or anything, but it was so good. It was my favorite Ellen Hildebrand book yet. I think this is like my 6th book of hers that I read, and it was by far and away the best one. I would recommend it to everyone. It is long, but I liked it so much that I didn't really want it to end, so I wasn't bothered that it was long. I was like so happy to be spending more time with these people.
Is it a light read?
It is pretty light. So the premise, it's like, it feels semi-autobiographical because it's about a woman who lives on Nantucket, who's an author, a best-selling author who writes about Nantucket. And that is Ellen Hildebrand. That's what she lives there. She writes about it. And she's like a
That's
huge,
like 28 Summers.
Yeah. Ellen Hildebrand wrote 28 Summers. Yeah. All of her books are set on Nantucket. Same with the author in this book. It was like very meta. And it was so good. I would recommend it to anyone who's looking just like for a good read for vacation or the holidays. Like it gripped me. I made Claudia read it. She liked it too, even though it was really long. She was upset that it was so long. But I think it was like worth the time. Like when a book is good, I don't want it to end.
Yeah.
Then I started Middlesex by Jeffrey Eugenides because Dana insisted that I read it. I'm only 30% of the way in because then
it's
I
need a lot. It's a long book.
Yeah. And you need to start the Midnight Library. And it was just like Middlesex, I can tell, is like a good book and it's going to be good. But it's just, like, not at all what I need to be reading right now. And I'm just, like, feeling a little betrayed that you insisted so heavily when you've really never led me astray. But you obviously just don't know what I'm, like, needing right now.
But in all fairness, Middlesex has been on Dana's recommendation list to us since, like, freshman year of college.
No, it was on my want to read because she told me about it. It's, like, the third book of all, like, ever from 2 years ago.
I did read it a very, very long time ago, so it's a little fuzzy. Like, I remember most of it, but I think the nuances that are probably turning you off, I'm, like, not remembering as clearly.
Like, there are just, like, a few instances of, like, kind of really traumatic things, which is just, like, not what I need to be reading right
now. It's definitely a heavy, twisted, fucked up, scary, horrible book, but...
Right, that's, like, but I'm going out of my way to, like, avoid books like that, and
you
just, like...
You should read it while pregnant in a pandemic.
No, I am reading it. I might get back to it, because if I don't finish it now, I never will, but, like, it was good. I mean, it's so well written.
I think by the end, like, you won't feel traumatized after. I don't think you'll leave it being like, oh my God, I'm
I just don't
person.
Know if I can trust you. Plus, people were DMing me like, oh, that's a heavy book. Like, yeah. So I don't know. You're sort of like,
yeah, my threshold for heaviness is a little twisted.
Yeah, I agree. Like, your favorite book is A Little Life.
Right.
And My Dark Vanessa.
Oh.
My Dark Vanessa is so good. By the way, we haven't even talked about how it is All Too Well.
We haven't.
Oh my God. Not on the show. Well.
Not
oh
in person. God.
What do you think about that, Snatchler?
I mean, it is, like, to a T.
To a T.
100%. Trauma of it all.
Yeah, that's everything that I read this month. Dana, I can't believe you read 8. Please share
I also read The Last Thing He Told Me by Laura Dern.
You did?
We didn't even discuss it. We were both reading that. I felt the exact same. Just, like, didn't really do it for me. Was fine. Wouldn't not recommend it. Wouldn't recommend it. I gave it a 3.1, so very similar.
Okay.
And I also read Good Morning Monster by Katherine Gildener. I echo Jackie's sentiment that it was an incredible book. If you're into psychology at all or just like the human psyche, it is a no-brainer. Pick it up, read it. You will be changed and thinking about it for days, weeks, months after.
And I just want to say, you are into psychology, yes. Which is why I told you should read it.
Yes.
But I'm really not, which is why I would recommend it to anyone because it got me like got my beak wet in psychology. I'm like, this is interesting. You don't need to like know a lot or be really well versed.
And she teaches you too. Like it's instructional, but not pedantic.
Yes. Agreed.
I gave it a 4.4. Then I read A Ladder to the Sky by John Boyne. I gave that a 4.5. Reid and I read his other book, The Heart's Invisible Furies, which was amazing. So I knew I wouldn't be going wrong with this. And I was not. It is just as well written, just as long, but you never want it to end. Very good. Then I read Miss Benson's Beetle by Rachel Joyce. This was the weirdest book I've ever read, and I actually loved it, but I would never recommend it to anybody. It's not dark at all. It's just like, basically it's about an old woman who traverses the globe to look for a beetle that may or may not exist. Like, if I had read that description, I would have never opened it. Luckily, I just had it as a rec, and I'm so happy I read it, but I wouldn't read it if I were you.
Noted.
Then I read Lost and Wanted by Nell Frodenberger. It was okay. It was good. Didn't really stick with me, but I enjoyed it while I was reading. 3.1. Then I read The Lincoln Highway by Amor Towles.
You did.
I did. You know what, Jackie? It was the same book as This Tenderland, so I wouldn't recommend it.
Amor Towles is This Tenderland?
No. The book, The Lincoln Highway, is almost the same exact plot.
Yeah, that's like what I got from the description.
Yeah.
I'm in the middle of This Tenderland, FYI. Like, I'm not a full degenerate. This Tenderland.
And I like this. I gave it a 4.0, but like, if you didn't love This Tenderland, or even if you just read This Tenderland too recently, I wouldn't suggest this thereafter. It's too much of the same thing.
Okay. I've been seeing that book everywhere, and I really liked Amor Towles.
Loved Rules of Civility by him. I didn't really like A Gentleman in Moscow. I should give it another try because people really stan it. I just couldn't get through it. But
yeah, I should read that next instead of I think you'll
like
that because
it's very historically like related.
Okay.
Then I read The Family by Naomi Krupitsky. I gave it a 4.3. Sam Frankel's friend Sam Barish recommended it, and I always trust her book. She gave me The Push, which I loved. This was a great book. I actually think both of you and Snitch, you too, would love it. It's like,
it's called The Family?
Yeah, The Family by Naomi Krupitsky. It just talks about like people making their way to America and surviving in Brooklyn, and you know, I won't go farther than that, but I think you would both really like it.
Cool. Oh, it's a read with Jenna Pick. She picks really good books.
Yeah. It was really good. I don't think anyone would read it and regret it. The last book I read was Cloud Cuckoo Land by Anthony Doerr, which is everywhere.
Yeah, it's everywhere.
Okay, the whole time I was reading it, I was like, I hate this book. It's such a joke just because he wrote All the Light You Cannot See doesn't mean you get to be on every bestseller because you have one hit. This book stinks. And by the end, I was like, I love this book. This is one of my favorite books. I can't stop thinking about it. It was incredible. It's so different. Like, be prepared to read as if you're reading a textbook. It's all about Greek mythology, which I randomly know a lot about because all the liberal arts classes I took at Colgate were like Greek mythology. My FSEM was called Metamorphosis. It was just a very niche, interesting book, but I ended up loving it, although it took me to 85% to feel that way.
Okay, wow.
Interesting.
Thank you so much for all these recommendations.
Ladies, that was really fascinating. Thank you for this time.
Big month for books. I plan to have a big month of reading this month because of all the time off with the holidays, so I'm really excited. Please, as always, you guys, if you're listening, share any books that you think that we would like. I get so many book recommendations from the comments section.
Yeah.
So just comment on any of our posts, and we usually see it. I feel like that's how I found so many great books.
Yeah.
Especially if a lot of people recommend the same book. Yes. I'm like, okay, then I'm going to read it. I mean, and at this point, like, so many people have recommended The Rose Code and The Alice Network that I'm going to read those two books just for you guys, because just to let you know, like, I see.
Yeah.
I see you.
We trust you.
Okay, now usually this is where we would end the episode, but because this is our last episode of the year, we need to do our 2021 year in review for books.
Woo!
So just like last year, we're going to do our top three redheads books of the year and our top three non-redheads books of the year, but they could also wind up being redheads if you loved it so much. So let's start with the redheads, and let's go from 3 to 2 to 1, and then hopefully we will be able to tell which was the number one book of the year. Starting at number 3, Snitch, what did you have?
American Duchess.
Wow, so did I. And I was feeling so unsure about the choice. I'm like, did I just put it there because I chose it? But I really felt like of a lot of the books that we read this year, it stuck with me.
Yep.
I feel the same way, and I'm having this like moment of regret that I didn't include it on my list. My number 3 is Layla, and I think I just have to stick to my guns.
So yeah, good.
Stick to what you put.
I think about Layla too, mostly because I don't read a lot of like ghost books, so like anytime I have like a ghostly thought, I'm like Layla.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My number 3 was also Layla.
Oh my goodness.
Wow, Dana.
Can you believe Dana's number 3 is a Colleen Hoover? Anything can happen at the Redheads.
I really loved that book.
Colleen
Snitch.
Hoover is a fabulous writer.
No, I know, but like,
but no, yeah, you wouldn't expect me to have it, but you know, I think I had like, what was the one before We Were Strangers as one of my topics too last
year.
You
like low-key fuck with my choices, Dana.
Yeah.
Number 2, Snatcher.
I had Layla.
Okay, I had Midnight Library.
I had Detransition Baby.
I had Midnight Library.
Wow.
I didn't include Midnight Library in my 3.
But you loved it so much.
I know, but I just didn't.
Not enough.
Okay. Yeah. Not enough. Number 1, Snatchler.
You guys are going to be shocked, but We Are the Brennans. I fucking love that book.
Wow.
I liked it while we were reading it. I never thought about it
again. Me neither. I really couldn't tell you what it was about right now.
It just slid off me. My number 1, Clara and the Sun.
No!
Shut the fuck up.
I think about Clara. Every time I open up my shades, I think about Clara.
I think about that bitch all the time.
I think about her recharging me. She's recharging Brew. I love Clara and the Sun.
I can't. And what you're telling me is this is a list of our least favorite books of the year.
Maybe for you. Maybe for you. What was your favorite?
My favorite was The Nature of Fragile Things. I really loved that book. It like touched my soul, and it was just like everything that I wanted in a book. Historical fiction, adventure, etc.
Yeah.
Clara and the Sun.
Literally, like, guys, absolutely fucking not.
And it was a runaway. I loved that book.
Refuse this narrative of like this being in like our top books.
Yeah, we would have to do some math after this to figure out like what's the number.
We had the same one and two. That was interesting. And we had the same three and you had the same three. So we're all kind of aligned ways.
Yeah, kind of aligned. But I did feel like when thinking about the Redheads books of this year, I do feel like we played it safe a little bit this year.
We did.
You know, like, I feel like in the year before there were some really low points, but it also allowed for some really high points.
Maybe, like, we were coming off a pandemic and the last thing we needed was more disruption.
Yeah. But I just feel like for me in picking for next year, like, I'm going to try and even if it's a total flop, just to switch it up a little bit. I feel like I was really safe with my choices this year.
1,000,000%. I think after I selected The Kitchen Front, I just lived a life of regret. I was like, that
was crazy. Like, we read a cookbook.
I like Kitchen Front better than A Slow Fire Burning. Like,
I hated A Slow Fire Burning again.
It was like it was the
Miriam and the murder on the
houseboat.
No, it's not that I didn't like The Kitchen Front. It was just that it was such a safe choice. Like, it was like World War II and historical fiction and food. Like, we're fine, you know? Like, there's so much more to life, as evidenced by the glaciologist.
I agree. Okay, so that's a good takeaway. And for next year, we'll be seeing more risky choices from Bex and I. Now it's time for our top three non-Redheads books of the year. So, Snitch, we'll start with you. Give us your three, your two, and your one.
Okay. Number three was Beach Read by Emily Henry.
Okay, cute.
Because I did actually technically read that this year, and I really liked it. Number two was We Are the Redheads.
Oh, my God.
And then number one was obviously It Happened One Summer by Tessa Bailey. Like, literally my favorite book ever. Snitch?
It's pornography for you, considering you read A Little Life. You know.
And now you're a married hag, so baby.
It's very spicy, but I felt like I liked it so much because the love story felt so, like, cute and real.
When I was reading The Lincoln Highway, I was thinking of Snitch because I was like, there's not one kiss in this whole book. No, no one holds
don't
hands.
Recommend it.
No. Okay, my top three are so fucking random. I'm going to look back on this and be like, what was I smoking? My number three, I couldn't decide. I had a tie. So I had Golden Girl because I just read it and I liked it so much. And I also had Every Last Secret by A.R. Torrey. I read it in the beginning of the year and it's everywhere now, like Book Talk, Instagram, like everyone. People are always recommending it to me. I'm like, I fucking found that book. No one recommended it to me when I read it. Like, I just like read the description. I thought it sounded interesting. And I told like Claudia to read it, and then we talked about it on the show.
Best.
So I just feel like it's like a boomerang. It's like coming back at me. And it's like, no, I think I found this book. But I don't know. Maybe I didn't. Number two, so fucking random. But it took me on a journey, a historical journey that really like was such a big part of my year. Queen Victoria's Matchmaking by Deborah Cadbury. It was a nonfiction book about Queen Victoria and her grandchildren and how she like set them all up in marriages to like so that they would sit on every throne in Europe. And I just, when I was reading it, I loved it so much. Like, I just wanted to always scurry away and pick up my Kindle. And then it set me off on reading about all those different people that I had. And it just gave me a huge education about history. And I just loved it and I miss it already. Then my number one was The Portrait of a Mirror by Natasha Joukowsky. Dana and I read this book over the summer. We made our friend Sam read it. I recommended it to so many people. Bex, you should read it.
Josh read it on our honeymoon. He loved it.
Josh read it.
Is the one that's like just a dialogue between two people?
No. It's about two different couples. Their lives are interwoven because of like work and other stuff. And it's just it's very dense and there's a lot of like art references, but it's just like a very apt description of humans.
Yeah, I'm going to read it.
Read it. It's just so good.
On point, and I loved it. I loved it so much. It was my number. It was the best book I read this year.
It kind of reminds me of you, of how you would like handle social interactions, because she's quick like that, you know?
Yeah, it's
like,
no, you 100% should read it.
I'm going to read it. Like, my mind is exploding with all the books that I need to read. Like, I don't know why I get paralyzed in between Redheads episodes of like...
But why don't you read over the holidays? Like, this is a perfect...
Well, I'm going to Florida on Wednesday. Like, I'm 100%...
Okay.
Okay, just have to talk about like my ranking of like what is going to be my go-to list.
Yes. Okay,
that... Like, there's so many right now.
Now we've
like,
given you so many. Yes.
So many. Those are great books, Jack.
Yes, I it's a really random list, but I do feel like it covers the gamut of what I was into this year. Bex, what about you?
I agree with that. So, Dana, I am apologizing in advance because these are all your recommendations.
Oh,
so, like,
good.
If they're on
that.
Your list, too,
no, even
like,
better if they are.
I think it's beautiful. But first of all, The Midnight Library.
Number three?
Yes, that's okay. Number three for me. I thought it was fantastic. And, like, I think that, like, even it was just so recent, but like, I think even if I marinated on it for the next few months, I would agree that it was my number three. Number two is The Push such an intense, profound read. Like, could not put it down, and it was just, like, blew my mind, body, soul, and did not stop thinking about it. It was very intense, so I just will say that. And then number one is The Heart's Invisible Furies. Again, like, so damn good. Like, can't even wrap my head around, like, how much it triggered my feelings.
And should I read it?
Yes.
Yeah, you for sure.
Yes, I would love it in a real way.
Okay.
You'll love it in a real way. Like, it's just an intense, powerful book, which I think is, like, my sign that I love a good read, which is, like, why I always take Dana's recs.
No, I'm so happy you picked those. They are very similar to mine. Okay, so the third, kind of a wild card, but I chose Dark Matter by Blake Crouch. It's sci-fi. It's literally The Midnight Library. Like, if you guys are listening and you love The Midnight Library, then read Dark Matter. Same exact concept. More sciency, but parallel universe, etc. Great, great book. I was torn between The Heart's Invisible Furies by John Boyne, which I ended up picking, and Rules of Civility by Amor Towles. Though two of those books for me are, like, kind of the same for some reason, but...
Rules of Civility is an honorable mention for me, too.
Yes, honorable mention Rules of Civility, and honorable mention Portrait of a Mirror. I was really struggling to include that, too. And number one, I gotta say, The Push by Ashley Audrain.
Wow.
It was really the book of the year for me. It was one of the best books I've ever read. I would recommend it to everybody.
No, no, no.
Not to everybody.
Not to everybody.
Because Rebecca, when you guys read it, Rebecca said, I wouldn't read it if you want to have kids in the next 2 years. And I'm pretty sure, like, that was the week I found out I was pregnant. So I was like, I'm never reading this book.
And I recommended it to my mom who read it. And, like, I had two sisters who were pregnant at the time. And yeah. So she was very, troubled by it. It's just, like, if you have children in your midst, like, I think, honestly, like, the cutoff is, like, where we're at right now. It's, like, we don't have kids, but, like, in a few years we will. I think if you have kids and if your kids have kids, like, it's off limits.
Okay, I recommend it to everyone who doesn't yet have kids.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. Wow, you guys, what a great year of reading for all of the girls. Thank you guys so much for being redheads as always. Before we let you go, we have our next book announcement. We will be reading Snitch's Choice, our first book of 2022. Snitch is going to lead us off. Counts, what will be the Layla of next year?
I chose The Simple Wild by K.A. Tucker. It just came highly recommended to me, and I just think that we, like, just need Before We Were Strangers in the midst.
Kicking off 2022, so right.
Yeah, so okay. I'm very excited. It has a 4.4 on Goodreads.
Hell yeah.
That's pretty good.
You know what else had a 4.4 on Goodreads?
Right Side?
Red, White, and Royal Blue.
Well, hopefully this is better, but I'm excited.
I'm excited. We love A Snitch's Choice. We're going to lighten it up after Midnight Library. And we will see you guys next year. Thank you so much for being redheads. This has been such a great year of reading. You know, as always, it's so nice to find comfort in books and with fellow readers and sharing recommendations. So we will see you next year. Goodbye.
Happy Hanukkah, everyone.